Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Did you hate your life?
No, it was all right.
All right, well, that's good. I don't want you to hate your life because of me. Well, actually, I might rescind that.
Well, it's too late. No.
Too late. We are reviewing, we are reviewing Mothra, the original 1961 masterpiece? Question mark? Maybe. We'll see. I'm Aaron. I'm joined today by...
Me, Andrew.
And Dylan.
We're going to start calling him Me, Andrew.
Me, Andrew.
Oh. Oh, my.
No. Oh, no. My.
No decay references. Okay. Here we are. We're sitting here. We've just watched the fancy new steelbook edition of Mothra. I have to say...
First ever release on Blu-ray?
First ever. I'd say I got mixed. I'll talk a little bit about it in depth. I got mixed reviews on the steelbook release, but we'll talk about it in detail here in a little bit. But
I'm disappointed in certain things, and the things that I'm disappointed in the fact that you spent so much money on it. There are no bonus features, really.
I guess we'll just go ahead and talk about the steelbook. There are a lack of bonus features that frustrates me. They have a teaser trailer and a trailer, both of the American trailers, and then they have like a 51 image photo gallery of like stills and posters and stuff.
Commentary of the American version.
Yeah, they have the audio commentary of the American version, and the play menu. Like I think they could have spiced up the play menu a bit. It's literally just a still shot of the poster with your options on the left side. I mean, okay.
Okay.
Now, the steelbook itself looks really good. I think we kind of talked about this already. It looks really good with the plastic sleeve, from the plastic sleeve to the front and the back cover. So the inside has still shots from the movie. I think that the steelbook itself looks really good, but the content on it. And then the transfer itself, the image looks real. I mean, it's a good transfer. I'm not going to say it's the greatest transfer I've ever seen, but... I mean, it's a decent Blu-ray transfer. I don't really have any complaints about that.
No.
But, I mean, I'm going to say for me personally, just to have Mothra on Blu-ray and to have the steelbook, I mean, it was worth the money for me.
I mean, it was only like 13 bucks.
I think I spent like 22 or 23 bucks on it. But
why?
Because.
I've literally seen it on Best Buy and Walmart for like $13.50
really?
Or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, well, because I bought it the day it came out, maybe. I don't know. Can't take it back now. So, anyway, like usual, we're going to start out. We're going to talk about the making of the movie. We're going to go into the trailer. We'll come back out on the other side of the trailer, just spitting out our opinions on this movie left and right.
Well, we'll talk about the cast and crew, and then we'll read a plot synopsis, and then we'll discuss
it. We'll do that kind of stuff, too. That's the boring stuff. Ugh.
You're the boring stuff.
Actually, I like the boring stuff personally, but very informative, even to me, who's been watching this stuff since birth, practically. So, anyway, we usually start out with alternate titles. There was only one alternate title listed on Toho Kingdom. It was the German title, Mothra Threatens the World. Kind of like that title, but I prefer the just Mothra. So, making of... This film was actually co-financed by Toho and Columbia Pictures. I don't know how much of the budget Columbia Pictures put into it. I'm going to say probably less than half by a good margin, but I don't know that for sure. So Columbia had co-financed it with the intent, obviously, of releasing it in America pretty soon after its Japanese release. Obviously, I think you can tell by watching this movie, and it was admitted by the creators of the movie. This movie is heavily inspired by King Kong, from the island to the natives worshipping the island god to, you know, the monster coming to mainland, you know, Japan in this case. So definitely heavily influenced by Kong. So when they decided to make this movie, they gave three young novelists the job of coming up with the story. And once they had kind of come up with the basic story, Shinichi Sekizawa wrote the screenplay. Shinichi Sekizawa is going to write a lot of these movies that we're going to watch. He wrote King Kong vs. Godzilla last week. He wrote a bunch of the other ones we're going to watch. He has said in interviews that this screenplay is his proudest work, the work that he's most proud of. I will talk about if I think it's his best script or not, but we'll get there later. This is the first Toho kaiju film to feature the destruction of the Tokyo Tower, a scene we will see played out many more times throughout these films. Ifukube refused to score this movie as long as the Peanuts song was the featured theme. I read that he said that he didn't think that he could write that song. So I don't know if he like refused to because he thought the idea of essentially, I guess, what is the equivalent of a Japanese 1960s pop duo singing a pop song and then him having to base a score on it was dumb. Or that he just didn't think that he could actually write a song like that that wasn't within his creative sphere. I don't know exactly which, but yeah, so he did not score this movie. We'll talk about who scored it in a little bit. But anyway, there was a totally different ending filmed for this movie that involved the villains actually kidnapping the kid, Shinji, and flying him away. Their plane ended up crashing into volcano mountainside, and Mothra tracked them there and killed them. Actually, a little bit of a funny story I found where they used in the scene, Nelson falls down into the volcanic crater. Well, they used a life-size dummy when they were filming this in the Fuji Mountains or whatever, and the second unit didn't bother to go pick up the fake body. So some hikers a little while later came along and thought it was a suicide victim, and the police like came out and excavated it and everything. Ishiro Honda said that they got a pretty good tongue lashing over that. Anyway, that's really all I could find on the making of. Not a whole lot there, I know, but box office, this movie was released in Japan on July 30th of 1961. It had a budget of 200 million yen. It made around 240 million yen. Attendance of 9 million, so 9 million tickets sold, which is up there in the upper echelon of Godzilla movies. I think the only two Godzilla movies that sold more tickets than that are King Kong, in Japan at least, are King Kong vs. Godzilla and the original. So, you know, a big box office hit for Toho, and it was released in the U.S. on May 10th of 1962. I couldn't find the box office results from its American release, but I'm sure they probably made their portion back. So anyway, that's really all I had in the making of this movie. I guess we will go to the trailer, and then we'll come back, and Dylan will read off, I will read off the cast and crew, and then Dylan will read off the plot summary that I have so nicely prepared. And, you know, put all my creative powers into.
I guess.
So, we're going to play the trailer. I'm not sure. Maybe the American, maybe the Japanese. Who knows? And we'll see you in a bit.
A remote Pacific island, where an expedition of world-famous scientists investigate incredible rumors of its fantastic mysteries and discover barren volcanic mountains surrounding strange green valleys. Mammoth caves that breed giant mutations. Vampire plants that devour humans. But most astounding of all, the tiniest women in all creation. Sacred beauties of a lost tribe which worships a monstrous creature. What is the secret of Mothra? What is the bizarre spell that awakens Mothra? As these doll-sized girls call to the super god from captivity.
Mothra, ya, Mothra, donga kasaku ya, indomu.
Mothra, whose revenge is more devastating than any man-made weapon. Mothra, who defies warplanes. wrecks ocean liners, smashes dams and bridges. Mothra, creating hurricanes. Mothra, enveloped in a shell that no human force can penetrate. Mothra, indestructible, all-powerful, indescribable. What kind of creature is this god monster, Mothra?
All right, we're back. I'm going to read off the cast and crew real bit. Cast and crew real fast. So this movie is directed by Yoshiro Honda.
Oh, who's that guy?
I don't know. I have never heard his name before. Written by Shinichi Sekizawa, like
never
I said
heard
earlier.
That guy before either.
Music by Yuji Koseki.
Literally, I've actually not heard of that.
Now that guy, yeah, he's a new one. He's new. Probably the last movie we'll hear about him too. So effects by Eiji Tsuburaya, obviously, and then starring Frankie Sakai, Kyoko Kagawa, Hiroshi Kazumi, Jerry Ito, and the Peanuts as the Shobijin. So now, Dylan, why don't you give them the plot?
All right. No promises on this. Aaron wrote it. When four shipwreck survivors are rescued from Infant Island, a place contaminated with radioactive fallout, and show no signs of radiation sickness, an exploratory group is sent to explore the isle and the supposed natives that the survivors' tale tells of. Included in this expedition is greedy foreigner Clark Nelson, radiation specialist Dr. Harada, anthropologist and linguist Shujo, and reporter Fukuda. There they encounter the Shobijin, two tiny women who are the emissaries of the natives' god, Mothra, a giant moth still encased in her egg. Nelson, seeing a financial opportunity, kidnaps the Shobijin and places them in a Broadway-style show. However, Mothra soon hatches from her egg as a giant caterpillar and makes her way to Japan. Upon arrival, she makes her way to Tokyo, where she cocoons herself at the base of Tokyo Tower. Meanwhile, Nelson is ordered by the government to turn the girls over, but attempts to flee the country. He makes it back to his home country, where he is killed in a shootout with police, and the girls are placed in the care of Shujo. Mothra hatches from her cocoon, now a full-grown moth, and her large wings cause hurricane-force winds that result in a giant amount of damage. Or a great amount of damage, my bad. Giant amount of damage. With the girls now in custody, our heroes get the idea of drawing the Mothra symbol on an airport runway in an attempt to lure Mothra to the Shobijin. The plan works, and Mothra and the twin fairies are reunited. With the Shobijin now in her possession, Mothra returns to Infant Island in peace.
Aww. Dylan corrected me earlier. Mothra is not a caterpillar. She is a larva. Caterpillars turn into butterflies. Larva turn into moths.
And other things.
I was aware of this, but I thought caterpillar was a more flamboyant word.
Flamboyant? What?
And is Mothra, like it's never said specifically that she's a moth.
It's literally in her name.
Winged creature. She kind of looks more like a butterfly.
She's a butter moth.
She's a
butter moth?
a moth fly?
Huh?
A moth fly?
A moth fly.
She's a made-up monster. How about that?
She is a winged creature. No.
She's a winged
insect. Apparently, in this movie, she is not even a winged creature. He is a winged creature.
The subtitles refer to it as a he in this movie. Mothra is very gender-fluid throughout the Godzilla and her own franchises. They kind of flip the he and she quite a bit. I'm pretty sure in the film we'll be watching next week, she is referred to. Well, obviously, she's a she because she lays an egg. So, yeah.
Whatever.
But it's a he this time around. So anyway, we're going to talk about the plot of the film first. This movie, not going to lie, it's a little slow in plotting. I mean, it takes, let's see, I wrote it down. It takes 46 minutes in an hour 40 movie before Mothra hatches from her egg. And then she doesn't take on her adult form until an hour 24. It's like 16 minutes before the movie's over. Mothra's not in this movie a whole lot, really. The plot is really heavily revolved around the kidnapping of the twin fairies and that. But the slow plotting doesn't really bother me so much. I mean, I'm not going to say the characters in this movie are phenomenal. They're not really fleshed out that much. But I think they're entertaining enough.
Yeah.
I think that the guy playing Clark Nelson, what did I say his name was?
He's
Jerry Ito. He oozes sleaziness.
Yeah, he's like disgusting.
He just looks like a sleazebag.
The entire time you're watching the movie, you're like, that dude's terrible.
And then
One point at the end of the movie, this man literally puts them in a suitcase. I'm like, if they were real, they would be dead.
They'd be dead. Yeah, so I think he does a good job of just playing a bad guy in this movie. So I like seeing him on screen, and he just kind of fluctuates between English and Japanese.
When he gets angry.
When he gets angry, he just starts shouting stuff in English. It's kind of funny. Like, and then I love, like, his main, like, secondhand man is, like, he's a Japanese actor, obviously, but he has, like, a mobster mustache that's, like, shaved, like, on the middle, like, under the bridge of the nose. They're obviously, like, bad guys from the moment you see them. And then he has another guy that's, like, an American guy. They're from the fictional country of Realistica, I believe, which is supposed to be, I think, some kind of cross between Russia and America. Like, if you look at their flag they have in one of the background shots, it kind of looks like a Soviet flag. But, like, when we get to New Kirk City, it's obviously, like, an American city. It's like New York and Miami combined, and everyone speaks English with American accents. So
you're like, okay.
And the reason for that is because Columbia Pictures said that, you know, in order for them to co-finance this, that Mothra had to attack a non-Japanese city, and they probably required there to be, like, X amount of American actors in it and stuff. So that's why we got the ending that we did. Because actually, it was Columbia Pictures that told them that they couldn't have the original ending, because Columbia Pictures had to okay the ending, but Toho didn't wait for them to okay the original ending. So then they had to refilm it. But anyway, when we get to Infant Island, I think this kind of exploratory part of the movie is kind of interesting. You know, they go into this forest, and Chujo gets wrapped up by killer vines or something. And, you know, this whole story, there's more blackface in this movie. Not really any better than the blackface. King Kong versus Godzilla. Still just as racist. Still just as poorly done body makeup. But I like the idea. You know, Mothra is different from, you know, whereas Godzilla is generally more of a sci-fi type franchise, a character at least. Mothra is more of a fantasy type character. She's got, you know, natives of an island that worship her. She has these two little bitty twin fairy girls that are like her emissaries or whatever. And then, you know, in later movies, she'll have, like, literally godlike powers. So I like the sort of fantasy element that's in this Mothra movie. And not only the fantasy element, but the kind of, like, classic mobster crime movie element we got going on with Nelson and his bunch, like, kidnapping the girls and everything. I like the kind of these genre mixing and matching we got going on in this movie. I think it makes for an interesting watch. I don't know at what point, I don't know, like, was there a point in the movie that you, was there a section of the movie you thought was better than the others? Were you more engaged in one part of the movie versus another?
I mean, I guess the end of the movie, mostly when the monster shows destruction up. Was going on.
That was a pretty interesting part.
I mean, I'm a sucker for
monster
destruction.
Yeah, but
that's the American audience in me now.
Is it? Yeah. But yeah, I like this story overall. I mean, I know, like I said, it is kind of slow in plotting. There's not a whole lot of monster action until the very end.
To like be fair, I was extremely tired watching this movie. I mean, I had to, like, eat some carrots and drink a soda to keep myself awake.
You barely stayed awake.
Mothra, I think...
Well, after I ate the carrots and stuff, I stayed awake, but...
And then, you know, when Mothra finally does show up, I think this movie kind of picks up the pace a little bit. Mothra, you know, she destroys a couple boats, and she gets to Japan pretty... After she hatches, I mean, she has the scene where she's bombarded by the bombing planes or whatever, and then she gets to Japan pretty quick and destroys the dam, and then starts rampaging through Tokyo. And then, of course, you have the other plot going on of our characters, our heroes, trying to get the Shobujin back. And, you know, I think it's an interesting plot with Nelson, how he has these... He's forcing these girls to play in this Broadway play. And, you know, and, like, they're singing all the time, and he thinks they're, like, I guess he thinks they're like singing for the audience entertainment, but secretly they're really sneaky. They're actually calling to Mothra to come rescue them, and then they are eventually rescued. not by Mothra. Mothra actually doesn't do any rescuing in this movie, except for taking them back to the island at the end, I guess. But I don't know. It's a fun little plot. I mean, like I said, I know it's kind of slow, but
it's not terrible.
What did you think about the characters? Do you think they were at least watching?
They're entertaining enough for the movie that we're watching.
I think that the reporter guy is in.
They're better than some previous characters that we have had in other movies.
At least they're in the movie and don't like drop out halfway through.
True.
That's true.
And then
the reporter guy, I like the reporter guy. He's kind of funny. He's very
and
comedic.
Chujo is like, I guess, you know, a lot of these old movies, they don't really have a main character so much. But I guess if you had to pick out the main character, it's probably Chujo. And he will be back and be a major character in 2003's Godzilla Tokyo SOS. One problem I did have, like, just kind of, like, structurally wise, like, they really never, like, set up the fact that Mothra was attracted to the Mothra symbol, and they just, like, decided to paint it on the runway at the end of this movie. That will be a huge plot point in Godzilla Tokyo SOS, how Mothra is attracted to the Mothra symbol. But here, like, it's not really set up. And they also have the bell. I love how the church bells are, like, play, like, for no reason, just playing the Mothra theme. It's kind of funny. And the religious, like, I guess symbolism, where they have, like, the church bells, like, on the cathedral or whatever, with the cross on top of it, and the sun, which is, like, a studio light, positioned right behind the cross. It's kind of funny. I don't know if this should technically go under effects or not, but I love the color palette of this movie. This movie is very bright and very colorful. I think they did a good job with that.
It's pretty good.
This is not Technicolor, people.
This is not. No. It's what did they say? Easter? Not Easter. Somebody.
People.
But I think the coloring in this movie is really good. Yeah, it's very bright for the most part and very colorful. So I'll give them props for that. But anyway, that's really, I guess, all I had to say about the plot. Anybody else have any?
It's entertaining enough for what it is. I mean, it's not the best one I've seen so far, I don't think. But, I mean, it was all right.
Yeah, I think
the characters are entertaining enough for what we're...
Talk about acting in itself. I think the acting is good. I guess I did talk about it with Jerry Ito. I think he's a very good bad guy. I think the Peanuts...
He's very sleazy.
The Peanuts, who are, you know, they weren't actresses. They were a singing duo.
Do much acting?
They don't do a whole lot of acting, but I think they're good enough as these twin girls, you know, not talking. They're very pretty. And
they're old enough. What? Or dead.
Are they dead? I think the last one died here not too long ago.
That's sad.
But yeah, they and I think they do good enough in what they're doing. You know, they're always smiling and happy and, you know, really kind and everything.
Singing a song.
They get to do more acting in the next two Godzilla films, Mothra vs. Godzilla and Ghidorah, the Three-Headed Monster. They have to emote a little more. we'll talk about them when we get there, but their hair is so hilarious. Like in every movie, their hair changes like drastically.
Very drastic.
But they'll be in two more Godzilla movies. So, but I think they do a good job as the Chobujin here, and they look very almost identical. Like obviously that's helped by the fact that they both have identical wigs and identical makeup and identical clothes on. But they look very similar.
Twins.
They're identical twins, and they look like it in this movie. So. Good casting choice, I will say. Good casting choice. And I think they're singing.
They're like, hey, let's cast actual twins now.
I think they're obviously a singing group, so their singing is really good in this movie, I think. So, you know, props for them on that. But I guess that's all I had to say on the plot. So do we want to move on to creature design?
Let's do it.
Really two things we need to talk about. Let's start with Mothra's larva form.
She looks like a giant larva.
It's hit and miss. I think early on in the movie, it looks pretty good. Later in the movie, it kind of starts to look like it's kind of beat up. Like, maybe it was intentional. I'm not really sure. It looks like, in some scenes, like, it looks faded out. And, like, there's, like, cracks in the suit. Like, again, and, like, little holes in it. It's like they burnt it during that scene with the jets are firing at it in the water. And they should have filmed that scene last, but they didn't.
It's highly possible.
It's kind of what, like, that might not be the case, but that's kind of because it has like little black spots on it when she gets Tokyo. Maybe that was intentional. I don't know. But the suit kind of looked, or the puppet looks a little rough towards the end. But in shots, it looks pretty good. And then I think that they do a good job of, like, the movements and stuff of it. Like, I mean, obviously, like, they're just kind of, like, rolling it across the ground, but...
It looks natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a larva crawling. Yeah.
It looks like a giant
That's effects,
larva.
Aaron.
What?
But that's effects.
That's effects.
Okay, whatever.
What are we going to do?
Talk about it later. same creature, different form. The adult form.
Mothra, final form.
I think Mothra, considering this is her first appearance, I think the adult form of Mothra is really amazing.
It looks pretty.
She's a pretty.
The
pretty
wing patterns creature. Are really creative.
Very colorful.
Very colorful. I think she looks more like an insect. I mean, she doesn't, like, have a whole lot of insect characteristics, but she looks more like an insect than she will a few more times during the Godzilla series, I think. But, yeah, she's just very colorful. Like I said, wing pattern very good. I think I guess I'll talk about that in a little bit. I think the adult form of Mothra looks really good in this movie.
I like her. She's pretty.
So,
pretty props to the moth. No.
Props to Super Eye and his team. I think they did a really good job on that.
Yeah.
But anything. Anyway, I guess moving into effects, there are some hits. There is hit and miss. I think matting is better than it was last week with King Kong versus Godzilla.
Still.
But you can still see them outlined in blue.
Still hit and miss.
When it's a matting effect. And it's pretty rough when they're matting on, like, human hands, like, trying to, like, interact with the Shobujin girls. Kind of looks. And it's obviously dolls, like, when Nelson picks them up later, like, they're obviously dolls that he's holding that don't move much. But, you know, whatever.
Models look pretty good.
I will say the models look really good for the most part in this movie, especially at the end of the movie when Mothra's blowing through with her hurricane winds coming from her wings and they're just blowing everything away. I think the models look really good, especially in, like, in Newkirk City when she's tearing Newkirk City apart. The only thing I will say bad about the models is that they still have, like kind of like in Varan, they have shots where in the vehicle, there's little stick figures in the vehicles, and those
shots... Or no stick figures whatsoever, they're just empty little vehicles.
But the ones with stick figures look bad. There's even little motorcycles with little stick figures riding them. In scenes, and they're like,
and you're like, huh? Wait, what?
I'm like, meh. Man. Like, I think the vehicles look good when you can't see the stick figures, when they don't have them in. The vehicles look about as good as, you know, they're going to look in these old movies. But yeah, anytime they put a stick figure in the vehicles, they don't look great. But, you know, that's a minor complaint, really. What else is there? I don't remember how visible they were in the other DVD transfer I had, but in this Blu-ray transfer, the wires on Mothra are pretty visible. But like I said, I don't think they were as visible in the DVD or especially in the VHS version. So, you know, that's just a downside of 1080p. You're gonna see some wires that you might not otherwise notice. But I think they did a good job of hiding the wires on the vehicles and on the planes. And for the most part, on Mothra larva, but on the adult Mothra, when it's really, you know, the whole scene takes place, which I'm grateful for. I like when scenes take place in bright daylight. But again, the downside of that is that you're going to see the wires. And it's hard to, maybe they could have used white wires, but maybe then they would have reflected the light.
And then
you
could see them worse.
I don't really know. I'm not a special effects guy, so... But I think Mothra's movements, like in her flying forms, her movements look about as good as they're ever going to look, or look going to look for a while. And I think the movements of, like I said, of the larva form look pretty good. I really like the scenes of the larva form moving through the city and, like, trying to fit in between the streets and stuff. I think those are done really well. But anyway, so effects overall pretty good. Like I said, matting still suffers a little bit, but...
But it's 1961, what can you do?
Yeah. It's 1961, you can't complain too much, so... I guess moving into final phase, the score. So, no Akira Fukube this time around. I will say that, what was his name? Yuji Koseki. The Mothra song is obviously phenomenal. It's iconic. Good. It's great. It's super catchy. I love the Mothra song. Now, the score around it is...
Okay.
It's okay.
Like, it kind of ventures into generic monster score at times. And a lot of the times, it's just kind of there. a lot of times it's just, you know, like the Mothers theme playing like really quietly in the background. I feel like Ifugube maybe would have not been able to write as good a Mothers song, but I think the score surrounding it would have been better and more energetic, but
probably
is what it is.
It's whatever.
And sound design, I guess, kind of also talking about sound design, the sound that it makes up the twin fairies' native language or their telepathic signals or whatever.
That, someone with a keyboard.
Someone with a keyboard going.
And you're like,
it's like, man, they could have maybe done a little more with that, but it's kind of whatever, you know. So I guess.
Guys, get a keyboard.
But I can't really knock the score because I love the Mothra song so much, and it's so great. And
it's catchy.
And it is catchy. Mm-hmm. And Ifugube will obviously have not rewrite the lyrics, but, you know, do his version of the Mothra song a couple more times, and I think is also really good. But I think this original version is really good. Probably maybe still the best version. I don't know if I would commit to that or not, but it's really good. So score overall is pretty positive. So I feel like I've talked a lot. That's really all I had to say. I guess we can get into some final thoughts.
Go for everybody it, Andrew.
Andrew, you want to go first as always?
Okay. Well, this movie was a pretty good movie, all in all. The characters were pretty good characters. I liked the characters. I think I'm going to give this movie a B.
A B. Okay. B. Dylan, what do you think?
Yeah, no, this movie's not bad. Not the greatest one I've seen so far, but not the worst by any means, that's for sure. The characters are passable for the movie that we're watching. I mean, they're pretty entertaining at times. Some of them are pretty funny at times. The story does get kind of slow. It's pretty slow at the beginning, starting out. Definitely picks up when Mothra finally shows up, and that makes it more entertaining. Other than that, Mothra looks, I think, really good, especially when she's in her, what I'm going to call, final form.
Final form.
Final form. Mothra, final form. But her larva form is not bad. Pretty good at times, or most of the time. But definitely her final form, I think, looks really great. I think they did a great job with that. The effects, like you said, the matting is probably the worst part of the movie, or the worst effects part of the movie. But, I mean, I guess you work with the technology that you have at the time, I mean. But it's definitely a lot better than some of the matting that we've seen in the past, so yeah. That's good. And then the score is okay. I do like the Mothra theme. I think it's pretty catchy. It gets stuck in your head pretty easily, so that's, they did their job with that. But other than that, I mean, the score is all right. It's a monster movie score. But the movie's okay. I'm gonna give it a C+.
Ouch. Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, you know, I can see where you're coming from. Like I agree. Like we said multiple times, it is kind of slow and plodding. Takes Mothra a long time. It takes Mothra nearly half the runtime to finally show up. And even once she shows up, she's kind of only in the movie here and there. But personally, I'm really fond of this movie. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Mothra. I don't know if I've made that clear before.
Hey, Aaron likes Mothra.
Mothra is my second favorite giant monster behind Godzilla. So I really like that this is her origin, her first movie, her origin story, I guess, and everything. So I forgive a lot of its sins. I do kind of like the kind of espionage kind of subplot with the mobster subplot with Nelson and his goons and them kidnapping the girls and everything. And like I said, I kind of like the genre mashup we got going on in this movie. And the effects, like you said, matting, not great, but the models, I really like all the model work in this movie.
Models are great.
I think it's really good. And some of the bad effects are exacerbated by the fact that this is a Blu-ray transfer and you can see them more clearly. So I always kind of, I'm a little slack, give a lot of these movies a little slack because I don't think the creators were looking in the future 50 years like, better make these look good for that 1080p transfer they're going to get in 50 years. But I mean, over, and then of course Mothra, I think that the people that worked on designing Mothra did a great job. And I really like the look of Mothra, especially her adult form. I think it's really neat. And so I'm going to give this movie a B+. Yeah, entertaining enough. If you have seen other movies with Mothra in it and liked them, I think you will like this movie. So definitely, is it still, I guess people would like to know, nobody's listening to this, but people would like to know, is the Steelbook worth the purchase?
Considering the fact that Aaron overpaid for it.
Considering that I bought it when it was $20-something. Considering that it's only $15 now, I would say that if I mean, if you're a Mothra, or if you're a fan of these movies and you really like Mothra, and the only legal DVD edition you're going to have is that Toho Collection DVD, which, I mean, it's fine, but I think it's not the best, like, as far as bonus feature. It's not loaded with bonus features. Pretty, I guess, what they would call a pretty bare bones release. Just, you know, a couple little, like, the teaser trailer and the image gallery is the only bonus features, and the audio commentary, which I didn't listen to.
But, I mean, at $15 for Blu-ray, and then
it's nice, like, it looks pretty on the outside. Steelbook, yeah. So, yeah, I'd say go for it. If you got some extra cash laying around. You could spend it on worse things, which I'm sure I have. Way worse things.
What?
But, like, that Blu-ray version of the Deadly Mantis that I just ordered for us to watch eventually, which that I haven't Blu-ray watched that movie.
Death Kappa that you have for some
Death
reason.
Death Kappa cost me, like, $5, okay, so.
They should be giving that away,
though,
should pay you to take it.
Man, the double feature of Reptilicus. I bought the Blu-ray double feature of Reptilicus and Tentacles. I can't speak to Tentacles. I'm sure it's terrible.
I'm sure it's terrible.
But Reptilicus is... Wow, it's rough.
We'll talk about that one down the line.
It's a little ways down the line. It's a little rough. I think Dylan will love it. Absolutely love it.
I think Dylan will be
more entertained by next week's film, however. I mean, I guess you've seen it already.
We haven't done news.
Yes. Skipping news. There's a little bit. I gathered up a little bit of news.
He found news, guys.
I found some news. Google found
some news. Guys, he found some news.
So I guess by the time this episode comes out, it will be
Tuesday.
It will be the weekend before last G-Fest happened.
This will be released on Tuesday, July 23rd.
Yeah. So G-Fest will have happened, I guess, two weekends prior. I still haven't got to go.
What is G-Fest?
It is the Godzilla convention.
Where?
In Chicago.
In Chicago?
In Chicago.
That's a thing?
Yes, yeah. It's a big thing.
G-Fest.
It has like... It has like 2,000 plus attendees every year. And they have special... I think Akira Takarada goes quite a bit. They have Robert Scott Field, I think, every year. He's the American actor in a movie down the line, Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah. He usually acts as the translator because he speaks English and Japanese. Seems like a really cool dude. But anyway, I would really like to go sometime. But I don't have a lot of free cash flowing around.
Is that an expensive con, or...?
Well, it's not expensive to buy tickets to get in there. It's expensive to get to Chicago.
I mean, you could drive.
Oh, God.
From here, it's only like 12 hours.
Only 12 hours. I mean, I guess we could drive to Chicago.
Yeah.
Is it only 12 hours? Really?
It's only like 12 hours.
Okay, well, maybe 1 year. I don't have a lot of people just jumping up and down to go with me. So
I'll go with you if you want to go to it.
Me and Dylan, maybe. We'll see about going.
We'll take Andrew.
We'll make a trip to Chicago.
How much does it cost to get in?
I don't know how much tickets are. If you pre-order, like, pre-order the tickets, I mean, at the door.
I mean, it can't be, like, Comic-Con level expensive.
No,
Comic-Con's like $350, like, the whole weekend.
I think it's, like, for a whole weekend. I'm not sure about this. I think for like a whole weekend, it's like $60 or something.
Okay. That's pretty decent.
So
the biggest problem is gas getting there and a hotel.
Yeah.
How long is it? How many days?
I think it starts Thursday night. Kind of like Comic Con.
Like
it starts
Thursday night
and
then
they
do Friday, Saturday, and
wrap
Sunday.
It up Sunday. So. Yeah, cool. I think it'd be kind of a fun trip. I think, you know, we could do other things in Chicago. It's at the big Chicago O'Hare Airport hotel right there by the airport.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. You had to book your... If you want to stay in that... I mean, there's a lot of neighboring hotels, obviously. If you want to book at that hotel, you've got
to... Probably have to book like a year advance.
Yes, also, that would be the big expenses, hotel fees also.
Well, we don't have to stay at that hotel.
Well, I would like to stay in one of the close hotels, and they're all expensive right there around the airport.
I'm sure.
So... Because I would not want to have to commute back and forth every day in Chicago. And around the airport, that would be
miserable.
Living hell. So,
absolutely miserable.
But I do plan
maybe
on going.
Maybe we'll look into it for next year.
Well, I mean, it's in the same weekend of July every year. So
Maybe we'll look into it next year.
We'll look into it next year. I really want to go. I will go eventually. Eventually. As long as they keep having it. I would really like to go. Anyway, moving on. So, you know...
Not cosplaying as a monster.
No, they do have a costume contest there. Some people make some really good costumes, too.
I'm the dress-up as Godzilla.
Yeah, but anyway, we were talking about King Kong vs. Godzilla and how they didn't have a good Blu-ray edition for the Japanese version. Well, I still don't know if they're going to have a good Blu-ray version of the Japanese version, but FYE, which is a site I had never heard of until like last week, has an exclusive steelbook Blu-ray edition of King Kong vs. Godzilla posted on their website. It's available for pre-order. It's supposed to come out on September 10th, and it's going to be $17.99. That's the only details they have about it. They don't know. They don't have whether it's the American version and the Japanese version or just the American version. That's, like I said, that's literally, they don't have a picture of it, the artwork or anything. That's the only details they have
about it. It might be just the Japanese version.
If I had to venture a guess, I'm going to say it's probably just a steelbook version of the American version.
Yes.
It might be a Japanese, too.
Because I think they would have made a bigger deal of it if it was, like, you know, like...
Because the Japanese version is hard to come by.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. We'll see if it actually comes out on September 10th. It looks kind of sketchy, but we'll see.
Did you pre-order it?
No, I did not. I'm going to wait. Because it looks kind of sketchy, I'm going to wait to see if it comes out. And see, if it's just the American version, I probably won't even bother with it. But I'm just going to see. So, speaking of home media releases, Godzilla King of the Monsters has been announced that it will come to home video to 4K, Blu-ray, and DVD on August 27th. The artwork for the 4K disc looks pretty sweet, not going to lie. So, I'll be picking that up.
What's the 4K look like?
It's like a blue cover with Godzilla, like, being Godzilla. But it's pretty cool. And I think there are other cover options, too. But, yeah, August 27th. I'll probably just pick that up at Walmart when it comes out or whatever. But probably get the 4K version, just because.
Might as well.
And last but not least, Godzilla has officially joined Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, my God.
Toho has finally put out an official Godzilla account. You can find them at Toho_Godzilla. I think the page's actual name is like Godzilla.official.
That's a pretty cool 4K case. Yeah, I like that.
It's a cool 4K case.
Let me guess. Even the Blu-ray case is kind of nice. I kind of like the Blu-ray case.
Let me see that one. I forgot what it was.
It's King Ghidorah and...
And Godzilla.
And Godzilla. That's, almost looks like Mecha Godzilla there. Not going to lie.
Yeah, it is a funny little picture. But so, yeah. So, exciting stuff. Does your theater still have Godzilla this weekend? I think it does.
I can sure find out for you real quick. You give me 1 second.
Okay.
You give me.
I still want to see it one more time for it.
You give me 1 second.
I still want to see it one more time before it leaves theaters.
Nope, wrong theater.
I saw like a week ago someone, like one of those magazines published an article about how Godzilla came to his theatrical run, into its theatrical run, and was like detailing his performance. I was like, there's still 4 showings a day at our local theater. It's not at the end of its theatrical run, idiots. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how little research they put into their article. Like, that's pretty sad.
Today is the last day we have it.
Today? Today?
Today.
What time is it?
Well, damn it.
12:45 today.
Well, I guess I won't be seeing it in the years anymore. Maybe,
catch it at the Mall Trio.
Catch it at the Mall Trio, I guess, maybe one day. Mm-hmm. So,
probably be out pretty quickly.
Yeah. So,
you can watch it for $3.
I guess we'll get into next week. We have Mothra versus Godzilla. So, I'm excited about that. That is one of my favorite Godzilla movies. Not gonna lie. Really excited about it. I don't know what Dylan's excitement level for it is. Yeah.
Also a movie. No.
Also, that is true, yes. Not really related to this podcast, but I ordered on Amazon Prime Day, I ordered the complete Universal Monster Classic Collection. Has all 30 classic Universal Monster movies on Blu-ray. Me and Andrew sat down last night and watched the original Dracula and the original Frankenstein. They are movies from the 30s. I actually enjoyed them. You know, I am a nerd, so that helps. They are a little slow in plotting, even though they're only like 70, 75 minutes. And I do think Frankenstein was a legitimately good movie. Tried to tackle some big themes and did it semi-successfully. But anyway, off topic. Dylan, if memory serves me, we do another podcast, even though I have been very, very lazy about editing our last episode.
Ooh, yeah, I think you're right. What's that one? DNA Film Wars?
Maybe. It sounds familiar.
Sounds familiar. Anyway, so we run another podcast called DNA Film Wars where we discuss usually the weekly big movie release, as well as this year we're working on a Star Wars look-back series leading up to Rise of Skywalker at the end of the year. Next year we're talking about doing all of Christopher Nolan's filmography with his new movie that comes out in like September in the middle of all that. But if you want to hear us talk about the weekly big new release, this upcoming week we'll be doing The Lion King. Last week, depending on when you're listening to this, here pretty quickly.
I hope our to
most,
have.
Our most recent episode should be Part 7 of our Star Wars Look Back series. Over,
but not episode 4, seven.
A New Hope.
Part 7. But not
part
episode
7. Of our Look Back series.
But
it's
A New Hope. I have been super late. I hurt my foot, to be fair.
He
doesn't
did.
Really have anything to do with editing. But it made me not feel like doing editing. So,
but yeah, so if you want to listen to that or check us out with that one, we're up on all major podcatching services. We're also, that one's hosted through SoundCloud. So, yeah. If that helps anybody out there.
Yeah.
Also, as far as social media goes, for that one, we're up on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DNA Film Wars, all lowercase, no space on all those platforms. Give us a like or a follow on those. And if you want to contact us on that one, you can contact us at dnafilmwars@gmail.com. So.
Yeah, and for this, as far as this podcast goes, if you want to contact us by email, we are stompthisway1954@gmail.com. We are also up on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at stompthisway.
Why don't you go ahead and tell them where they can find our website, Andrew?
You can find us at www.stompthisway.podbean.com.
Yep. You can check out our full schedule of events on our website, as well as
see what we've graded past movies.
Graded past movies. You can see our news and updates the news and update section that I try to keep updated to the best of my abilities, limited abilities. I think I'm gonna have to redesign that page though, looking kind of crowded. You're so anyway, yeah, check out our website. Also, check out our backlog of episodes. We've now got a decent amount of episodes going. I forgot now. But we've reviewed...
probably close to 10.
We've reviewed the first 3 Godzilla films, as well as 3 other films in between. Well, no, the first 3 Godzilla films plus King of the Monsters.
So 4 Godzilla films.
So 4 Godzilla films.
And then Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, them, and...
this one.
Varan.
And Varan, and then this
one. And this one, so... 4 Godzilla movies, 4 other movies,
and then one
plus an intro and a move and an episode where we discuss the graphic novel and the score for King of the Monsters.
10 episodes. This is our 10th episode. This is our 10th anniversary, guys. Is that how that works? Dylan's already running for the door. He's like, only 10. Good God, I feel like I've done 100.
It's a long journey, boys.
I think we got a good couple of weeks. We got, like I said, Mothra versus Godzilla. Followed by Rodan, followed by
Ghidorah, the three-headed monster,
followed by a really exciting event. We're going to go to theaters after that.
And watch the new riff tracks over the spider invasion thing or whatever.
Yeah, giant spider invasion or whatever.
That'll
so
be fun.
That'll be fun. That'll be our second trip to the theaters for this podcast. So, really fun. Really fun.
My second ever riff tracks live.
Your second ever riff tracks live. Did you like your first one?
That movie was garbage, but it was so freaking...
The audio commentary was pretty good. And it wasn't their best one. I thought, me and Andrew saw their Octoman.
Oh, God.
And Octoman, that movie was horrendous. Absolutely horrendous.
I can only imagine.
But their song that the guy wrote for it.
The one that we watched was, what was that?
He's Octoman.
Star Raider. Or something. Had the guy from Starship Troopers. It's a newer movie, but it's like a super cheap.
It's from 2017 or something like that.
Yeah, super cheap direct-to-video
movie. Oh, dude, it's bad.
Star.
Had that guy from Star Troopers who was, like, really big for, like, all of...
2 seconds?
2 seconds. Literally 2 seconds until the movie came out. Starship Troopers came out.
And then they're like, nope.
Until people saw it and they were like, maybe not. And, how far the mighty have fallen. It's pretty sad.
This one is, like, a classic monster movie, though, isn't it?
It's a monster movie. I don't know how classic. I mean, it's an old monster movie. Yeah.
Well,
I never heard of it until I saw that Rip Tracks thing. But it's old black and white giant spider movie. I actually think that they did riffed it when they were doing MST3K like way back in the day. But they're gonna redo it for their Rip Tracks. So be really, really fun and exciting. We will when we eventually. I mean, that's several weeks down the road. When we get to that, we will be strictly reviewing the Riff Tracks version. I'm not going to track down, although I think the original version's at free on Tubi TV right now, but I'm not going to sit through that movie twice because I'm sure it's pretty terrible. So, but anyway, that's way in the future. Well, way in the future. It's like a few
years. Does anyone we're going to talk about their commentary too?
Yeah, well, we can comment on their commentary, if you will. But anyway, I think we need to wrap this thing up. We're getting close to an hour here.
Been rambling here.
Yeah, we've been like rambling pretty 20 good. 20 minutes. So thank you for joining us. I hope you continue to tune in every week as we review a new giant monster movie. Yeah,
join us next week for Mothra versus Godzilla.
Again, yep, Mothra versus Godzilla. One of the, hands down, one of the best Godzilla movies to be made. I'm not going to try to hide my feelings about it. So, But as always, I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Dylan. And we'll catch you in the next one. Tanda pangura dan tonju kana kasaku yam mosula ya mosula dongang kasaku yam indomu lusto wilado hamba hamba mu yam tanda pangura dan tonju kana kasaku yam mosula ya mosula dongan kasaku yam indomu lusto wilado hamba hamba mu yam Tanda pangura dan tonju kana kasaku yam mosula ya mosula dongang kasaku yam indomu lusto wilado hamba hamba mu yang tanda pangura dan tonju kana